Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we're really close, folks, to wrapping up the ratification debates, and we're trying to really focus on that. And so we've got Paul Venable with us to close on the North Carolina debates. And so welcome back, Paul. And how you doing today? You're probably still on mute, so you may want to check your mute.
Sorry, GR. Yes, I was talking. Yeah. One, I'm fine. Two, I can always find something to be grateful for. So thanks for having me.
No problem. As a matter of fact, I've gotten a lot of good feedback that this is helpful, because if I just read it, I don't think of questions and I don't hear something that jumps out. But what it also affords me is the opportunity for you to read something and kind of break in and stop and say, okay, so here's a really critical point. Now, what we did at the very beginning was we covered the states that did not contest the Constitution. So let me emphasize this, because this really goes in a line with this, you know, this what I've been talking about over the past 2 days regarding the Convention of States and how, and actually I think their new term or name is Convention of States Action. And so the Convention of States, that organization, Convention of States Action, has, you know, come out and you know, so let me just ask you, Paul. I think you've read the how they've characterized or how they listed Republic Review. Do you think that they've kind of libeled themselves because they believe that Republic Review depends on the federal government to actually enforce it or, you know, fix themselves?
You know, I'm not. I should be more familiar with legal terms. However, I think that they've stepped on something that they don't have a lot of information for. They haven't studied it.
Right.
They don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And so, however, the very fact that they brought it up must be a concern to them.
Yeah.
I think, frankly, GR, I think that's good news.
Yep.
Okay.
Right, because, so here's the thing. Wyoming should have, as a dark red state, because, see, they're banking on dark red states stepping up. They're banking on the real conservative states to actually step up against Biden. And all of a sudden in Wyoming this past year, there were a lot of people that when they were testifying to Congress that Republic Review was a better way to go. Or not to Congress, to the state legislature, I'm sorry. And so as they testified, you know, Republic Review was brought up enough to where they go, you know what, we're going to have to attack these guys. Okay. Instead of saying,
so
you know what?
It's not like...
Go ahead.
No, instead of calling you up and say, hey, you know, what is this?
No.
You know, give me an education.
I think that the logical thing to do, because this is what I've asked the John Birch Society to do, because I asked them on a definitive position, and I said, well, you know, let's have a round table discussion so that we can kind of go through what is the real problem and what is the best method of actually solving the problem. And, well, join the John Birch Society. Get us richer. You know, ingratiate us with financial backing. And I think that's kind of what both groups are doing. There's no doubt in my mind, because there's money involved. And as a matter of fact, I happened to pull in the financials over the last couple of years' financials. And, you know, there's some people that are getting paid a decent little salary. I mean, you know, I'm not doing this for a salary. So, and there's no doubt in my mind that John Birchers, there's some people that are getting paid a salary. It's their job to focus on building and helping grow the ranks so they grow the revenue for the John Birch Society. It's about revenue. And so, you know, folks, you know, who has your interest at heart? Are the people that are concerned about the revenue got your interest at heart, or the people that are actually trying to propose to you to make rational arguments to say this is what we have to do and this is why we have to do it, and not be based on a financial gain?
So, real quick, let me ask you an off-the-wall question, okay?
Okay.
You know, we don't necessarily agree with progressives, but what is it about an Article 5 convention that they are resisting? In other words, liberals and progressives don't like it. It doesn't fly well for them. What is it that they are objecting to it? I really don't know, but it's, you know, like you said, they're targeting deep red states, but in some of the documentation I've seen, Democrats fight an Article 5 convention.
Really? So I'm not sure that they really fight it. I look at it this way. One of the most important aspects of progressing forward on an agenda is to keep people divided enough on internal fighting, internal issues to, you know, to be able to, you know, persist in advancing evil. And so this is why controlled opposition is so critical in our political world, because the real danger is us uniting. If we actually unite on, you know, enforcing the Constitution, then that actually fixes the problem. It kills the goose that's laying their golden egg. And the progressives want enough golden eggs to basically buy up the world. And that's what they're able to do. Because when you look at it, because technically, as I pointed out, the deep state would be able to seize full control over a constitutional convention. And as a matter of fact, I don't think that they would be able to, not even that. Let me back out even further. When you compare the Articles of Confederation to the U.S. Constitution, the powers that the Continental Congress had in putting a check on something, and the states, you know, it was really ambiguous. It only said that, you know, you can't submit an amendment or a change to the Articles of Confederation without having a unanimous approval. And they knew that they were stuck because this organization called Rogue Island refused to give them any amendments to fix the problems. And so there was no language whatsoever in the Articles of Confederation to really give Congress, or I should say Continental Congress, any powers, and it was ambiguous that it required all of the states to concede. So in other words, the amendment process was not really defined in that old Articles of Confederation. Now, in the new one, in the new Constitution, in the new government, it actually created a very specific set of language that Congress could submit amendments and that the states could convene a convention to basically, you know, pass amendments. But bottom line, it says right there in Article 5 that it will require 3/4 of the states. So the John Birchers are absolutely out. The supreme law of the land demands that any changes or new constitution, even if they rewrite it, they can't change the actual language in the existing constitution that it would require less than 3/4. The new constitution may actually provide a majority like a democracy, but it would still, before it could be invoked, it would still require 3/4 of the states to pass it. Period.
Right.
Because that is the supreme law currently.
Right.
Yeah. Now you can change the supreme law, but you have to first go through you have to comply to the law first. So you know, they're I think that they've actually gone well beyond in trying to pervert this concept. And it supports, and I'm not trying to support the convention of states, but I'm supporting the truth. And so the fact of the matter is, and I say this all the time, there's only four reasons that you go down this Article 5 process path. Either there is a defect in the Constitution, that's one, or the federal government needs more power and you have to grant them that power, so that's the second one, or they have too much power and we need to take that power away, and that would be the third one. There's a fourth, and the fourth is to rewrite the Constitution, and Congress does not have the authority within the Constitution to rewrite it. They can only make an amendment to it. The only time that the Constitution can be rewritten is when you have the states all together in a convention.
So here's a question. What would constitute a defect? I thought that's what we've done, you know, like 28 times before. You see what I'm saying?
Well, so technically, a defect would be where you actually find a problem with something in the Constitution where it's a conflict. And I'll give you a good defect, because there's two defects. The 17th Amendment and the 16th Amendment. Both of those amendments create defects.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in other words, they create a conflict. The new amendments, because they did not fix certain parts of the Constitution that they were trying to amend, you know, and you know that. Article 5, right. Amendment Protection Clause, and the Uniformity Clause regarding the 16th Amendment. And so those are defects. You know, there's just because people didn't understand the Constitution, they went ahead and accepted it, and they allowed the federal government to do all of these things. This clearly the states could say, hey, hold on, you cannot have progressive tax. Nowhere in there does it say you can have a progressive tax. It has to be uniform. You need to at least be uniform. It's just, you're just changing the mode of how you're collecting tax.
Okay.
And so it may not be based on apportionment. It may be based on income, so that now you could actually tax states more or get more per capita out of certain states. And one of the ways they did that was they went after income, and they basically claimed companies and businesses have income. And so that income, now they're not only taxing individual income, they're taxing business income. And so when you have big states with lots of companies, you know, not just a lot of people, you can actually double up the tax and get a lot more money out of a richer state than you can out of a poor state. So they're literally violating the Uniformity Clause when they create a progressive tax where the richer people that make more money, we tax them more. Technically, they don't do that to businesses. Why don't they do that to businesses? They apply the uniformity principle to businesses, but they don't apply the uniformity principle to the income of people. And the Constitution demands that all taxes be uniform.
So what you described, so you said there are four reasons we would have a
right.
Article 5 convention, and one of them is a defect in the Constitution. But we can just as easily solve these defects by dealing with these amendments directly.
Yeah. Okay? So it doesn't require a convention of states to actually, you know, submit the, because state legislatures have the authority to say, we think we need to have an amendment. I mean, if you look at all of the different amendments in the Constitution, 20 of them, if I remember correctly, 20 of them were basically driven by the states. The very first 10 were driven by the states. The 11th Amendment was driven by the states. The 12th Amendment was driven by Congress. The 13th Amendment, I'm not sure if that was driven by the states or not, so that's kind of one in suspect. But when I say the original 13th Amendment, the 13th Amendment that we have, that was driven by Congress. The 14th Amendment was driven by Congress. And the 15th Amendment, I'm not sure if that was driven by Congress or whether that was driven by the states. So that's another one in question. But the 16th Amendment was driven by Congress, but the 17th Amendment was driven by the states. And then the prohibition and the women's rights, those came from the states, you know, the women's suffrage. And then the poll tax, I think that was driven by Congress, not by the states, but the voting by age was one that was done by the states. So when we start looking at it, they got a lot of amendments that were driven by the states.
Right.
So why is it that what happened? What changed that said, you know, we couldn't do this? Because actually, the 27th Amendment was driven by the states.
Right.
You know, the senators' wages and all of that. That just happened in 1992. The states actually came together and says, you know what? We want this because it was part of the original Bill of Rights. And so that all came from the states, and the states actually resurrected that and passed it. So you can't tell me that something is, you know, broken, that the states can't drive amendments. It happened in 1992.
Right. Well, so let me go back to this list, because what you're telling me is there are four reasons, okay? And the first reason we can still deal with.
Yep.
Next reason needs more power.
Yeah,
we could have remember. Okay, we talked about the Department of Transportation.
Right.
Okay. Well, you know, you had three presidential vetoes. Now, what baffles me is if they really wanted this, why didn't they just make an amendment? So, in other words, they. Let's say the Congress needs more power. They could make an amendment to. For a Department of Transportation, or they can make an amendment for some other department. So that didn't require, had they done it, it would not have required an Article 5 convention. So number three, needs less power. Okay, that still doesn't require. I think what you've done, GR, maybe you did this without knowing it, is that you have whittled away every reason but one for an Article 5 convention, and that's to rewrite the Constitution.
Well, that is correct. And that's why there is a level of danger. Now, we can quickly refute the danger because, bottom line, if somebody came along with a new Constitution and it wasn't anything better than what we had, then it would be very easy to get the negatives from the states.
Sure.
And so bottom line is, you know, what are we looking at? We're looking at spending a lot of money to send people to have a boondoggle to fail us.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way. This is why when you really look at the convention of states, they don't have a hard amendment. They throw out there this term limits, but term limits has been around a long time and it still has never gained ground. I mean, people have been talking about it and they say, we want this, but there's still not enough states that have said, you know what, we're going to pass this. How many states have term limits?
Missouri has term limits.
Yeah. And so does South Dakota.
Right.
And so there are a few states that have it, but when you got to get the majority, if not all of the states, to have term limits first.
And by the way, I think if there were a movement to remove term limits, I think Missouri would probably take it because they have identified disadvantages to term limits in this state.
Right. And so my point is that all you need is a consensus. You know, you just need enough people where it's more than a majority that really believe that that's going to fix the problem. And term limits will be a failed amendment. America doesn't want term limits. There's a lot of noisy people that say we've got to have it, but that doesn't make it a majority.
It also doesn't address the real problem. And the real problem is that the people don't know and they're not enforcing the Constitution. because when you have that knowledge, you have built-in term limits. Okay, you either vote them out or you remove them when they violate their oath. There is no better protection. Like you always say, we've got all that we need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yep. I'm just like I told you earlier. You know, I think about this and I can't wipe the smile off my face, because if we get this message out and get it out effectively, you know, the people can turn this around.
Right. Yes, we have the ability to actually get the federal government, because just changing out who is in office doesn't get government to behave any better.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next guy in is going to do exactly what everybody else has been doing, because we've failed to enforce the law. This is what they've been doing. The only way to get them to change what they're doing is actually enforcing the Constitution. It's not by changing out the people, because the next people that go in can be equally as corrupt or even worse. Look at look at the Gang of Four. I'm telling you, 20 years ago, you know, to get that many people, or actually I should say, you know, that whole gang that they've created that are outright communists, absolutely. Getting them elected would just have been repugnant. And so, you know, it's only getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, JR. Well, I think, how many minutes do we have? We've got something to read.
Yes, we do. And we've got about 2.5 minutes. And so we're right at the Declaration of Rights at the very, towards the very bottom. And so let's go ahead and dig in. Start off with the first one. Now, what I was trying to say, though, and I don't know if I said this, so let me set the precursor up. Now we're going through, because we did this with we went through the recommended amendments of a lot of the states. And so now this is the one state that decided not to join the union. And what they did was they wanted to make it very clear where they stood before they joined the union. They wanted these declarations of rights. They got some amendments and so forth. So that's what we're going to go through. So go ahead and let's read the first one, because we got about a minute and a half. So let's read that one first. Yeah.
So we got 20 of these. Here's the first one. One, there are certain natural rights of which men, when they form a social compact, cannot deprive or divest their posterity, among which are the enjoyment of life and liberty with the means of acquiring, possessing, and protecting property and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. Two, that all power is naturally vested in and consequently derived from the people, that magistrates, therefore, are their trustees and agents and at all times amenable to them.
Hold on.
Three.
Hold on.
Okay.
So right here, they included a term that under the Constitution gets obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
Magistrates, that is correct. Magistrates are, you know, are blown away. There's no more anybody that has the power and authority to, I'll just say, be able to write the law and enforce the law and judge you. Like the king. So in other words, I think one of the things that they lost, and you could tell that the Federalists didn't have much to do or did not guide them on that very particular language, because the separations of power was invoked in this Constitution, and it permeated out into the states too, because even the states gave up magistrates. So we've got 5 seconds left, so I appreciate that. That's got us down through two. Now we have three and on. So folks, when we come back from the break, we'll be able to pick this back up. Sorry for the lingering on the Convention of States, but you know, these things are important and they all are connected, and there's probably no better grounding for understanding all these issues than reading the ratification debate. So anyway, we'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now we're moving into the third declaration. But if you just remember that this is the state that didn't want to join. So, in other words, there was still a high preponderance of anti-federalists. That it's not like they rejected it, but they took a pause on not joining the union. They said, "Well, we'll revisit this," and that's what they ended up doing. It was a little over a year. But anyway, go ahead and read the third one and on.
Number three, you can hear me, okay? Right?
Yeah, I can. Okay. Sure, go ahead.
Number three. The government ought to be instituted for the common benefit, protection, and security of the people, and that the doctrine of non-resistance against arbitrary power and oppression is absurd, slavish, and destructive to the good and happiness of mankind. Interesting that North Carolina should use that. Uh-huh. Four, that no man or set of men are entitled to exclusive or separate public emoluments or privileges from the community, but in consideration of public services, which not being descendable, neither ought the offices of magistrate, legislator, or judge, or any public office to be hereditary. Five, that the legislative, executive, and judiciary powers of government should be separate and distinct, and that the members of the two first may be restrained from oppression by feeling and participating the public burdens. They should, at fixed periods, be reduced to a private station, returning to the mass of the people, and the vacancies be supplied by certain and regular elections in which all or any part of the former members to be eligible or ineligible, as the rules of the Constitution of Government and the law shall direct.
That Six. Almost reeks like term limits.
It does.
Okay. All right. Okay. Go ahead.
Kind of. Six, that elections of representatives in the legislature ought to be free and frequent, and all men having sufficient evidence of permanent common interest with and attachment to the community ought to have the right of suffrage, and no aid, charge, tax, or fee can be set, rated, or levied upon the people without their own consent or that of their representatives so elected, nor can they be bound by any law to which they have not, in like manner, assented for the public good. Seven, that all power of suspending laws or the execution of laws by any authority without the consent of the representatives of the people in the legislature is injurious to their rights and ought not to be exercised. Eight, that in all capital and criminal prosecutions, a man hath a right to demand the cause and nature of his accusation, to be confronted with the accusers and witnesses, to call for evidence, and be allowed counsel in his favor and a fair and speedy trial by an impartial jury of his vicinage, without whose unanimous consent he cannot be found guilty, except in the government of the land and naval forces. Nor can he be compelled to give evidence against himself. Nine, that no freeman ought to be taken, imprisoned, or deceased of his freehold.
Uh-huh.
Oh, deceased.
right.
of his freehold, liberties, privileges, and, or franchises, or outlawed, or exiled, or in any manner destroyed or deprived of his life, liberty, or property, but by the law of the land. 10. That every freeman restrained of his liberty is entitled to a remedy to inquire into the lawfulness thereof, and remove the same if unlawful, and that such remedy ought not to be denied nor delayed. 11. That in controversies respecting property and in suits between 244, is that a reference?
Yeah, so usually, so you know, that's interesting. I usually cut those out. You never see those. That's a footnote that was done by, I want to say, the Constitution Society, because they have all sorts of footnotes regarding this. And and so I apologize. I didn't cut that out. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'll go around those. That in controversies respecting property and in suits between man and man, the ancient trial by jury is one of the greatest securities to the rights of the people and ought to remain sacred and inviolable. 12. That every free man ought to find a certain remedy by recourse to the laws for all injuries and wrongs he may receive in his person, property, or character. He ought to obtain right and justice freely without sale, completely and without denial, promptly and without delay, and that all establishments or regulations contravening these rights are oppressive and unjust. 13. That excessive bail ought not to be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. 14. That every freeman has the right to be secure from all unreasonable searches and seizures of his person, his papers, and property, on warrants, therefore, to search suspected places or to apprehend any suspected person without specially naming or describing the place or person are dangerous and ought not to be granted. Can I remark here?
Yeah, sure, go ahead, absolutely.
A lot of what they're saying, there seems to be, you know, we had other states that proposed ideas, and they seem to be, this mindset seemed to be universal among the states.
Sure, absolutely. Okay?
In other words, right, in other words, they're saying things that we recognize are in the Bill of Rights, and not just North Carolina, but the other states as well are expressing these. Almost, it's as if it was in the DNA of the colony, of the states, that they are so, you know. Remember, they didn't have, you know, they didn't have the internet, they didn't have instant communication, and so. These, what they're talking about here, so ingrained in the society that just about every state is, it's, can almost express these like word for word. Where did they get this from? You know what I mean? In other words, how did they, well, some of, you know, some of the people were in, obviously some of these people were involved in the convention, but. But again, you have language here that sounds like the Bill of Rights in just about every state.
Okay, so that's really easy to answer. All of this is basically echoing and further expounding upon the glorious Bill of Rights that as Englishmen, they fought a war over.
Okay.
And so... the language, the reason why the language is practically verbatim almost in some cases, and it seems to be so identical, is because this is an evolution. The initial galvanizing of rights started with the Magna Carta. And then the Magna Carta was a predominant protection of the people for hundreds of years, and then all of a sudden the people slowly started getting, you know, the ratcheting effect. The king started actually taking away the rights of the people, and the people were kind of grumbling until they got to a point and they had to fight a revolution, and technically it was almost like a civil war. The Glorious Revolution during the 1600s, basically the byproduct was galvanizing the Glorious Bill of Rights. And it was a building up of, and this next one you're going to read is a part of that. That this what you read, most of these things came from the Magna Carta. It was a part of the Bill of Rights, and you're going to read this next one. And this is another common one, but this is a very specific one that, you know, was very important to the people. If you read the Declaration of Independence, before they actually got upset and said, you've gone too far, the first thing that they did was they petitioned government. And that's what you're going to be reading next. And this goes back to what we, you know, what killed a lot of our time before, how the Convention of States, you know, all these people want to straight, you know, bypass, you know, the actual calling them out for their violations. In other words, one of the things I tell the, you know, leadership in the Convention of States when I'm actually talking to them, you know, and I'm not talking about leadership in the organizations, but I'm talking about leadership in legislatures, because I've actually talked to a few of these guys that are the, you know, quote unquote champions for this, what they call a solution. What is this bamboozle or this you know boondog of, you know, wasting time? And I said, you guys have never articulated what all the problems are. You just say, well, there's the government is so out of control, we need a convention to enforce the Constitution. And then they're absolutely wrong. So here's the thing. How come they haven't actually created like what Martin Luther did or like what I've done and gone through and created a color-coded constitution and said, here's really how the magnitude of the problem. Why are they not doing that? Because they know that the Constitution is not the problem. They can't point to the Constitution as being the source of the problem. It is government that is failing to actually act upon the Constitution. And the day they actually come up and say, here's the problem, they've just proven to themselves that their solution is not a solution at all. It's a solution for fixing a deficiency in the Constitution or granting more or less powers. That's it.
Right.
So they're, you know, why are they being so deceived? I'll just say mischievous. They must have some form of machination, some designs that are, I would just say, other than honorable.
Is an appropriate question to ask them, what is the issue they're trying to solve? Is that an appropriate question to ask them? Have they answered what it is they're trying to solve?
It sounds like
you're saying they want a blank check.
They want a blank check, and they've convinced everybody that because it's in there, that's what we have to do. Well, hey, what you're going to read next is in there as well. But see, if you don't walk into the building and say, hey, I've got your solution. You need this, you know. You actually have to come in and say, hey, do you think this is a problem? This is how you approach it, right? I mean, you know, you're looking at what your solution is, lighting, and you walk into a building and you don't say, hey, I've got lighting. You actually have to point out what the problem is and say, you know, your lighting is not very good in here. You either need more windows or better lighting. Oh, well, hey, I've got lighting for you, and I have a solution that fixes that. This new lighting will actually solve a problem. In other words, they don't want to even talk about the problem. They just want to ambiguously state that, oh, well, the only thing in the Constitution is the Article 5, and they're outright lying because they're saying that amending the Constitution is the only way to enforce it. And no, it is very specific. It is for amending it only. Enforcing is in what you're going to read next. So go ahead and read this.
All right. Just a minute.
Number 15.
15. That the people have a right peaceably to assemble together to consult for the common good or to instruct their representatives, and that every freeman has a right to petition or apply to the legislature for redress of grievances.
There you go. That yep. right there is what you do when there's a problem. And they even include, or to instruct their representatives. We have a right not only to petition them to point out that they're doing the wrong thing, but we have a right to instruct them.
Okay.
To teach them what they should be doing. And that's one of the things that we put in the petitions, is the instruction, you know, how they're right. making these mistakes and what they need to do to fix it. So, anyway.
Correct.
Okay. So,
in other words, so essentially what you've been saying is the COS people are coming up, hey, we got the solution, and they haven't even defined the problem.
Right. And, you know, the best way to do that is by using petitions.
You're right. Okay.
Because if not, you're just a squeaky wheel. You're just an annoyance.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Here is, 16. Do the people have a right to freedom of speech and of writing and publishing their sentiments, that freedom of the press is one of the greatest bulwarks of liberty and ought not to be violated? 17. Do the people have a right to keep and bear arms, that a well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people trained to arms is the proper, natural, and safe defense of a free state? The standing armies in time of peace are dangerous to liberty and therefore ought to be avoided as far as the circumstances and protection of the community will admit, and that in all cases the military should be under strict subordination to and governed by the civil power.
In other words, the representatives of the people. So this is one thing that the Second Amendment folks completely, I mean literally, they don't get. They don't right. understand. And so, you know, they don't stand up. And, you know, because what this says right here is that in, where is it? Standing armies. Where is the standing armies? You say, okay, that standing armies in time of peace are dangerous to liberty. What is your municipal police force?
The standing army.
That is a standing army. It is a group of mercenaries, of people who now make a living. I've made this argument that once you create a police force, I mean, it's one thing to have a sheriff and a posse. Mm-hmm. In other words, right. the sheriff should have, you know, on call those people who are necessary to basically enforce the law or what have you. But it should never be the model of money making to support the sheriff and the sheriff's office should never be on the table. In other words, we've talked about this, you and I, about, you know, the fact that they create these laws like a seatbelt law. You know, seatbelt law has nothing to do with truly your safety. If you really want to make a law that would be effective in saying you need to wear a seatbelt, then you'd make that law that if you are in an accident and you're not wearing a seatbelt, you are not entitled to sue your, you know, your sure. insurance company or the person you hit. If even if you're at fault or they're, even if they're at fault, you're not entitled because you had to at least be prove that you're responsible enough in protecting yourself.
That would get a lot of people wear their seatbelts.
Absolutely. And it would get a lot of people wearing helmets. Either that or you suffer the consequences.
Sure.
But we've created sure. this use of insurance as a safety net for, you know, protecting us from our own bad behavior. And that's why mm-hmm. insurance companies have gone down this wrong track. And so this is why governments got involved in insurance and insurance companies. They want them to cover everybody for, you know, cover your mistakes. In other words, removing the consequences of sin, because that's when the evil really comes in. Because now you right. can do bad things and it doesn't matter. We got you covered. You can be as bad as you want as long as you've got insurance.
Right.
Okay.
I hear you.
So, okay. Go ahead.
All right.
18.
18. That no soldier in time of peace ought to be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner and in time of war, and in such manner only as the laws direct. 19, that any person religiously scrupulous of bearing arms ought to be exempted upon payment of an equivalent to employ another to bear arms in his stead. Now, this is one's interesting. I've not heard this one before. So let's say someone is just maybe a conscientious objector and doesn't want to bear arms. But this is so important that they have to, it says they have to employ someone to bear arms in their stead. That's interesting.
Yeah, so in other words, they're exempted when they can pay.
Ah, okay.
So it says, in other words, so let me read it so you hear it from somebody else instead of in your head. That any person religiously scrupulous of bearing arms ought to be exempted upon payment of an equivalent to employ another to bear arms in his stead.
In other words, if he's not if he's unable to serve, pay for that, for what you're not providing.
So no, what they're actually doing is they're saying you can have a conscientious objection, but you the only way to get that that exemption from service is you have to pay another to serve for you. Because, see, when they come along and they say, it's your turn to serve, it's your turn to serve. Back in those days, it wasn't just, you were a permanent member of the militia. They took turns.
So let me ask you a question. This is interesting. Let's go back to sheriffs and police forces. Okay. And what I think, if this were common today, I actually think society would look so much different. But what we have is, let's say you've got so I'm trying to wrap my head around this because I know that we have had police forces for so long, GR. We have had this mindset for so long that I'm sure that people can't even visualize a model in which you would have, local members of the community acting in turn to be able for the protection of their neighbors, to stop crime or to, you know what I mean? This mindset is, I believe I get it, and it's still hard to wrap your mind around because we're so used to seeing and elevating, police officers as first responders and I'm just trying to relate to the audience.
Right. Let me get back to the paradigm, the mind model that these men had. And actually, because a lot of people, we're so trapped in this paradigm of having people do the dirty jobs for us or what have you, that we've removed ourselves from the responsibility of being, a part of a civil society. A civil society can never come from a society that is controlled by people of affluence. And that's what we have today. And this is why we're becoming less and less civil. The perfect society is when everybody takes equal responsibility for one obeying the laws and for enforcing the laws. I can't, are there going to be police forces? The only reason that we have angels in heaven is to administer to us on earth. We didn't need ministering while we were in heaven.
Okay.
We had, the right of conscience and everything else, but we didn't take up arms.
Right.
There was a war, but I don't think it was a war of military force. It was an ideological war, and people took sides, and those who took the side of evil were cast out. I believe that, when we really look at the perfect state of man is where we all have and accept our responsibility and accountability to each other. That's where we have liberty. And so when we start creating these different enforcement agencies, I mean, we're so bad because the way government has become so tyrannical. Mm-hmm. And so we have to start accepting that we need to dismantle our police force. But the only way to do that is we actually have to train the public. You know, sure. If you look at what we've basically gone back and kind of created decent police forces, but they still are corruptible because there's money involved. Whenever you put money involved in anything, whether it's be politics, law enforcement, or what have you, and power, then it becomes corruptible. But when the people do it, then you remove the power, you remove the money, it is a responsibility. And this is how we can govern ourselves best, which is why they gave us the Second Amendment based upon the militia. The Second Amendment was just we're going to have guns so that we can, you know, allow our bullets to do our talking for us. That was not the point of the Second Amendment. It was about securing ourselves and protecting ourselves from standing armies or infiltration. It was our national defense as well as our national, because if you look at Congress's responsibility, we've got just a little over a minute. When we look at Congress's responsibility, then you will clearly see what Congress has the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. And so when we, you know, when we state it in that context, we can clearly see how, you know, the whole point of the militia is not to actually, you know, just go fight a war, but we're supposed to actually enforce the laws. So the Constitution mandates that we enforce the constitutional law. Why aren't we enforcing our state law and the laws of the county? We should. And absolutely, we all should have that responsibility. And so what ends up happening is people, I don't want to risk getting hurt. I'm more important. I can't do that.
Okay.
And instead we basically relegate that job to people to take that risk. And yeah, these things seem like they're good solutions, but we create corruption in our ranks in doing this every time. Every time. I mean, how many societies have to be cycled through these same problems every time? I think the framers really understood it and gave us a very good model.
Yeah,
and we
it was an inspired model.
Right, and we operated on that model for well over a century. I mean, I would take that back. I mean, New York, it was in the late 1820s when they created the first police force. Instead of having a sheriff and a posse, and instead of actually helping everybody get educated. So we're out of time, Paul. And so one of the things that I love is these deeper dives, these deeper discussions. And going into the Second Amendment, the reason it's so important is because so many patriots look at this as it's only a right to bear arms when it's not. It's a huge responsibility that every person is supposed to have, period. We're all supposed to be doing this. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.